Geek Tank is endorsed by the Jell-O House Foundation Foundation.
Hi, I'm Troy.
And this is Geek Tank on the Go.
Your novel-sized podcast.
Yeah.
Or I guess we'd be novella-sized.
Novella-sized. Yeah, we're kind of small.
Small. We have a very special guest today.
We do. We have John E. Stith, who is an author, a local author, and he writes hard sci-fi mixed with mystery, which I think is kind of cool.
Yes.
Thank you for coming on to the show.
Thank you for having me.
We have him via Skype, which is... I know that everybody else on this planet has figured out this technology, but we finally figured it out and squared it away today.
So I see more Skype interviews in our future.
So, okay. Well, first of all, do you want to give us a little rundown of your books for our listeners who maybe they're somewhat familiar with you, maybe they're not familiar with you. So you give me a little rundown?
Okay, well, I've had 8 novels published and 1 collection, so I won't bore you with all the gritty details on all of them, but I can hit some highlights. Redshift Rendezvous was a book published by Ace Books that managed to be a Nebula finalist, which really pleased me. It's very high-tech, hard science fiction, set on a hyperspace craft where the speed of light is 10 meters per second.
Nice.
So relativistic tricks happen at observable speeds. And in that setting, I've got basically a diehard on a spaceship scenario.
That was actually the book that I was going to try to get and read before the interview, and I discovered it's not going to be released on e-reader until I think it was November? Is that or October? Sorry to throw that out there. I had that and I lost
November
it.
November 15th.
November 15th, yes. And which surprised me because it had already won a novella. It had already won, so I was expecting it to be an e-reader.
Right. But what's happening is most of my work came out in the 80s and 90s and some in the 2000s. And so most of it's out of print, or all of it's out of print with the original publishers, Ace Books, Tor Books, and Science Fiction Book Club.
Right.
But Reanimous Press is re-releasing all the books at about 45-day intervals.
That's great. I'm looking forward to that one. I'm a big fan of murder mysteries and a big fan of Die Hard. I think it's one of the best action films ever, other than the bad guy coming back to life after being choked to death. But other than that, I love that movie.
It's one of my all-time favorites.
And I'm actually looking forward to – I'm going to read it as well because I love relativistic stuff. That's one of my big geeks is space travel and being realistic about space travel instead of – I mean, I love Star Trek. I'm a big Trekkie. But right. I love it whenever they start messing with when authors start messing with the relativistic time. Because it's something that – it's hard to wrap that concept around in your brain. And so I really enjoy it. So I'm looking forward to reading it, too.
And Guy definitely is our hardcore science. He likes to read NASA tech manuals.
Yes.
For fun.
I do that for fun.
So, yeah, that'll be interesting. I'm sorry to jump in there, but you said the Redshift Rendezvous, and that was the one that I'm looking forward to that one.
Right.
Thanks. Right. One of the books that is out already, Manhattan Transfer, came out a little bit before Independence Day, but it has some of the same imagery. But in Manhattan Transfer, an enormous spaceship arrives and slices Manhattan loose from the surface of the Earth, puts it aboard this ship with hundreds of other alien cities. And that's chapter 1 or 2.
Yeah, that'd be it. Yeah, I'm going to read that book too.
That's taking Abduction to another level.
Yeah, see, we were talking about this, and I read one of your books a long, long time ago.
When they were in print.
Because I read Scapescope.
Oh, that was my first novel.
Yeah. And so I've got questions pertaining Scapescope because I read that one.
Okay.
But it's one of those where it's been many years and I forgotten a lot of the details. And so I was like, which makes sense. I mean, it's, you know, but yeah, so I mean, it's, but then I was reading about all of your other books and I'm like, yeah, I need to read these too because they're all really interesting. So I feel kind of bad that we couldn't read up on you all the way. I mean, I you know, we only have, between the two of us, we have one. So we feel kind of bad about that, but we're working on it and we'll have more soon. And hopefully our listeners will as well, because these are intriguing.
Oh yeah. It definitely fits up what we like.
Right. Right. So, we've got other questions here. Yeah, we can go into these other questions too. What is your inspiration? What inspires you to write?
Love of reading was the starting point. Every once in a while, I'd put down a wonderful book and you get that. I don't know if you do or not, but I get sometimes a little adrenaline rush with the finale. You know, I feel that heat in my neck and that exhilaration that, you know, things all worked out the way I wanted them to, and maybe with a surprise. And eventually, you know, after having that experience often enough, I said to myself, well, damn, that would be great if I could do that, you know.
So yeah.
Eventually started trying to do that.
That sounds about right. Yeah.
Yeah. That's.
I actually do that too. I get that like, oh, this is so cool. Like giddy, almost like giddy when you're
reading
it.
You want to do that to get other people to feel that emotion. That's awesome.
Yeah.
When did you decide writing is what you wanted to do?
I came to it late. I didn't know. I have a granddaughter now who writes. She writes stories almost every week. I was not like that. I loved reading all along, but it was only as I was partway through college getting a non-writing degree, which is probably best, that I decided that, you know, I realized that I wanted to write. And then I spent probably a decade daydreaming about wanting to be a writer. And finally, in about 1980, when I decided if I was going to do this, I needed to actually do it. And I set myself a 15-minute-a-day schedule so that I'd at least do something every day. I wouldn't wait for that 2 or 3 hour block of time to get started, because those never came. But once it was a regular part of my day, an early part of the day, I enjoyed it enough that that time expanded and I got into the pattern of writing about an hour, hour and a half before I went to work, and then writing during every lunch hour I could.
That's awesome.
That actually answers part of the next question that you're going to ask.
What is your creative process?
Yeah.
Yeah. And sort of answers that one.
Creative process is writing before you take off for work. So does that apply today? Is that your same method?
No, I'm lucky enough that I'm writing full time now.
Oh, excellent. So what's your process now then for writing?
Well, it involves a lot of procrastination still.
Yeah, I get that. I hear that.
Generally, starting a novel, I like to start with three things. One is some emotional issue that's really concerning me at the time. Another is an interesting setting for the book. And the final component is the kind of story I want to tell.
Right.
And oftentimes those books kind of bounce off each other until I find three that fit together.
Hmm. That's interesting, actually. It's kind of cool.
Yeah.
You hopped.
I jumped on
you
his
jumped
question.
On my question.
Sorry
so
about that. Why don't you take my question?
Well,
I would take your own question.
I'll take my own questions. Thank you so much. I'm a comic book artist, and so. What I kind of was curious about is when I do work, I'm kind of old school. I started in the 90s, early 90s drawing. And so I still work on Bristol boards sometimes, and I'll scan the Bristol boards in and then digitally enhance them using Photoshop and things like that. But when I use my tablets and things like that and try to do it all on the computer, I just don't seem to ever get as far as I want. And it doesn't feel as right. So I still will print out like my blue line setups and then do them on the Bristol board and then scan them back in, which seems like kind of a longhand process. So my question to you is, what's your preferred writing medium? I mean, do you write longhand or do you use, a typewriter, or do you actually go straight into the computer?
Straight to the computer. I was an early adopter. You know, I did my first writing on a typewriter that long ago. And I still vividly remember one day when I spilled a half bottle of whiteout on my pants.
Oh. And
that was near the end. You know, when some people in CEFWA, Science Fiction and Fantasy Writers of America, were quick to adopt computers, and some were very, very slow, surprising to me. I was one of the first adopters. I wanted to get on a computer just as fast as I possibly could. And that's my preferred way. Once in a while, I try again with speech to text, you know, Dragon naturally speaking, things like that. Most of it's keyboard. That just feels the most natural to me.
Nice.
Awesome. Okay, you can ask the next one.
Sometime I would like to talk to you about your queue of work as a comic book artist, because on my to-do list is to find someone who's interested in doing a graphic novel of one of my books. So if you have interest in that, or you have an associate who wants to talk about that, I'd love to talk.
That actually is definitely something we could get into.
It's funny, because before we started, I was mentioning to him a question that we should add to our lineup, but I didn't know if we should start with you with this, was to allow our interviewee to become the interviewer and ask us a question. Because the last interview I was doing, the two girls I was interviewing just spontaneously said, can we ask you an interview question? I'm like, well, sure. And I thought, well, that'd be interesting to just add that to the whole thing that we do. And that would be the question you would ask is talk about that.
Well, and I belong to a comic book club, a group that kind of like your science fiction and fantasy writers.
Right.
It's the same sort of thing. It's called Red Team Go, and it's a bunch of comic artists, and we just get together just so we're in a pool, because the creativity builds.
Right.
And so we'll all draw together, and we'll all just sit together and kind of, so there's a number of, I've got resources that, you know, if you don't like my style, you might like his style, sort of thing. Right. So there's a lot of stuff that we could do there. I really need to get closer to my microphone.
Yeah, we have.
I just realized that it just got a lot louder when I got closer to my mic.
Oh,
that's weird.
Okay.
Well, we've got to take a quick break here. We'll be right back after this.
This is Colton Muheim from Red Team Go, and this is Geek Tank.
And we're back. Our guest today is John E. Stith. And he is a hardcore sci-fi writer and mystery writer, kind of combining the two genres.
Okay.
Well, I'm going to jump on. You had mentioned how the three elements you come up with for when you think of a story. A question I wanted to ask was related to murder mysteries. With mysteries, do you start with the crime as your starting point, or do you have another aspect you come at with a murder mystery? Or I guess it doesn't even have to be murder. It could be a mystery story.
I come up with a general idea first. For instance, Death Tolls, which may be one of my weaker books because it's mostly a mystery. It's only superficially science fiction. It's set on Mars, a terraformed Mars, but the story involves something that has been done here. The idea of newsmakers manufacturing the news for ratings. That was the, you know, the story idea I wanted to run with. Maybe I'm a chameleon in some ways, because I've gone through periods where I've read a lot of one writer I liked a whole lot and wanted to do a book kind of in that same vein, and that was on my Dick Francis kick.
Gotcha. That's a very prescient novel these days. I kind of feel like the media is kind of manufacturing a lot of news. So,
right. And we're giving the viewers the opportunity to tell more clearly what kind of news they want to pay attention
right.
to, which is a two-edged sword.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It is.
Oh, cool. Thank you.
Yeah.
We're out of order, but that's okay.
We're out of order, but you can ask this one, because this goes like
well, fine, I'll
together.
Sorry. So I'm definitely more into crime dramas and murder mysteries, whereas he's into the NASA stuff. So I've got
sci-fi
murder mystery stuff. I've noticed that this seems to be a pattern with, be it a book or a TV show or a movie, that there's this unwritten rule, or maybe it's written and I haven't found it, that you have to reveal who, at least you don't have to reveal that they're the killer or the criminal, but you at least have to introduce that character in the first one-third of whatever portion it is of the story. And since you're actually a professional writer who writes murder mysteries, I don't know if you can either confirm that or elaborate on that.
Oh, I definitely agree with that. I think you should get a sense of all the components that are in play, because you want to play fair with the reader. What you don't want to do is near the end pull in some brand new character or brand new technique, device that's never been introduced. You don't want to change the rules of what a given device can do. There was a period in time in Star Trek where all the solutions at the end of the episode were, if we just tweak the Framstat and melt it a bit, that'll provide a tool that we can do this with. But some of the best stories in Star Trek and in any area, I think, are the ones where it's a human solution.
Yeah.
And it's within the bounds of it's within the rules that you've already set.
No, I absolutely agree.
I think that's a great way to put it. You want to play fair with your readers and audience. That's a great way. I'm going to have to commit that to memory because that fits with that.
Yeah. So my question is, you've been out of the water since 1997. How does it feel to be back in the saddle? And are you finding any writing techniques that worked in 97 don't work now, or vice versa? No, that didn't work. Vice versa won't help you any. Do you have techniques that don't work now that you have to evolve?
Well, the first part of the question, I'm loving being back writing again. You know, I did have a hiatus because life intervened for a while. Certainly the book publication and marketing, the post-writing phases of writing have changed dramatically in the last 10 years. But the writing process, I guess, it's just gotten easier in some ways because the internet is such a wonderful tool. There are so many different apps now that can make it easy to, like Microsoft OneNote is a wonderful filing cabinet for all the ideas, characters, and elements that I'd like to get into a given novel.
Makes sense. Wow. I didn't think about the idea that, now you've got this technology where you can organize all of these things. I just drew them on like I had a whole bunch of sticky notes. That's like the way I used to do stuff. Always sticky notes.
Right.
Okay. This is your question.
Right.
See, it's why it's marked Troy.
Yeah. I thought you wanted to ask that even though I came up with it. So
you came up with it.
Right. So has the change in technology with e-readers and such been one of the reasons that helped inspire you to get back into writing, and now you have this medium that you can reintroduce your old work in?
It made it an easier process, but my work has been in print fairly steadily. Wildside Press re-released most of my work in the 2000s. Basically, I was wanting to try to capture a new readership, since there's a lot of turnover in readers. And one of the ways I thought would help do that is update the covers. And my publisher was receptive to that. Wildside was receptive to that. But they got overextended, and they had so much on their plate. They're very successful at what they do. Half a year, 9 months, a year went by after I'd given them several new covers, and they weren't able to find the time to do the updates.
Oh, that sucks.
And I was talking to Andrew Burke, who's the publisher of Reanimus Press, who's where I am now, and he was very excited to have me aboard, and since we'd be kind of starting over and releasing books, it was easy to start with the new art. So.
Okay, yeah.
Okay. So one of our listeners, James, he asks, how do you maintain your drive and focus over the long hours it takes to write a novel?
that is a challenge because I think temperamentally I'm probably more of a short story or novella writer. Spending a year or two on a project is really an endurance challenge, but the reward, you know, having a full novel completed and getting feedback from readers after it's done is, that's just such a charge that it's worth doing for me.
Well, that makes sense. That makes sense.
We also had another listener, Mike, who asked, why did you pick your medium?
In sci-fi and, mystery mixed.
I guess because I've enjoyed both over the years. And not all my work includes a mystery component,
right.
but several do. But I grew up just loving science fiction. My mom brought me a copy of Heinlein's Citizen of the Galaxy one day when I was homesick. And I had been reading Tom Swift and other things, but that got me on a whole new track. And I was lucky. I grew up in Alamogordo, New Mexico, near White Sands. And they had a science fiction section that was as big as the one here in Colorado Springs when I got here, despite being a very tiny place. So I was lucky. I had a wonderful array of books to choose from then. But as for whatever reason in the last 20 years, more and more of my pleasure reading has been mysteries. I still read some science fiction, but I read a lot more mysteries now.
Have you ever been to the VLA? Because that's out in that area too, the Very Large Array.
I haven't.
I haven't either, but I've got family now that lives in Las Cruces. And every time I'm driving down there, I'm like, oh, it's the Very Large Array. Can we go visit the Very Large Array? And my wife's like, no.
I should have tried to do that last year. My wife and I dropped down to my high school reunion in Alamogordo, and we went through Cruces. And we also went through Hatch because my wife
chili.
Was very excited.
Yeah,
about
chilies. Yeah, chilies.
So that was our detour. I'll have to remember the VLA.
Excuse me.
I figured that was a science geek question since I was totally lost when you asked it.
Yeah, well, and Spaceport America is also down there now, near the White Sands area, which is where Virgin Galactic is going to be launching their space flights. So, I mean, just as a side note, because everybody can stand to know this information. I mean, really, it's important.
Right. It's commercializing space travel. So it's important. Oh, we're going to take another quick break, and we'll be right back after this.
And we're back. So we're still talking with John Stith here. And
so I was going to ask, who's your favorite character in any of your books that you have written that's been the most fun to write? I guess would be one way to look at it.
Probably Nick Nock. He's Private Eye in Not for Hire.
That's a great name.
Good. Thanks. He's this is set, 20 years into the future where technology is running amok. We've got a lot of people who've come out of school with less than perfect educations, and they're designing our new AIs. And so this landscape is filled with malfunctioning AIs that have personality defects similar to human personality defects.
Right.
Nick is kind of our everyman wandering that landscape, trying to cope with a toaster that wants to do it its own way and vending machines that are more like marketeers.
Nice.
Yes. That's actually great. Now I got to read that book, too.
You just need to put his entire...
I know. I just need to read them all.
Yeah.
I just need to read them all. So your first novel was Scapescope in 84. And we had another novelist that we had interviewed at one point in time, and she had said that for her, there were five novels prior to that, to her first novel, that's just nobody's ever going to read, nobody's ever going to see, because they're horrible, terrible, terrible, terrible things. My wife is an aspiring novelist, and she's on her fifth right now.
Fifth novel that no one will ever see.
Fifth novel that no one will ever see, and no one will ever read. Do you have a few wreckages that before Escapescope came out, or was that just the lightning in the bottle and you were just right there?
Well, it depends on how you measure. You know, it, think of an auction house where you go up and someone's offering George Washington's original axe, but the handle has been replaced four times and the head has been replaced twice.
Right.
It's kind of like that with Escapescope. I went through, you know, probably a dozen drafts on it. After I had gone through enough drafts that I thought it was done, I was lucky enough to get into a writing critique workshop with people like Connie Willis and Cynthia Therese and Ed Bryant and a number of others who, to me, the critique process, if you find a good group, is invaluable, because when you're starting out, it's not the story that gets on the paper is not always the story that's in your head. And one of the things you develop the skill as a writer over time is to get those two versions closer together. For me, the critique process speeded that up. And eventually I was able to sell that first novel. But I do still have some, since then, some novel, like one or two or three chapters in outline or a proposal that my then agent didn't care for. So I don't know if I will resurrect one of those or not.
Well, you never know with times changing.
Yeah.
What might not have been approved of by an agent 10 years ago may become the hot thing now for this.
That's so true.
Right. Right. There was a period where he was rejecting some things. I think more because they were not military science fiction than anything else, because at that time, military science fiction was just red hot. But it's not my cup of tea.
But you have a history, because I mean, you were working in with, you know, in
right
down there. And I noticed this because I remember your novel Escapescope was the first time I'd ever seen GS ranks. I had never seen those before. And they were these phenomenal numbers. And now, right. Now my sister works for the DOD and she has a GS rank. And I'm like, oh, now it all makes sense. Cause I there was right. a point you were heading with that. And that was,
book, most of the population was employed by the
government. Right. So everybody had a
one more path. We don't want
right. a GS rank. So yeah. Okay. So that's what inspired you to write the military sci-fi. Was that was because you came from that general.
Right. I was an Air Force officer for a few years and I worked at NORAD. So NORAD is the setting, for Escapescope, of course. I imagined, at that time, when I was in the military, I was looking at this IBM 1130 computer that I worked on and saying, hey, I could buy government surplus one day. I can have my own computer. And fortunately, the trend was even better than I'd hoped. But I imagined that at some point, the NORAD China Mountain Complex might be sold for surplus and it would be taken over by some distant group.
Okay. I'm going to loop back around.
Yeah, because I interrupted him.
You jerk.
I am. I'm just horrible.
You'd mentioned your favorite character is Nick Knockout of your book for your books. What would be your favorite character out of someone else's book?
Well, the kid in Captain's Courageous certainly comes to mind.
I agree.
I loved Ender's Game. You know, that's Card for me is, you know, I really like some of his work and some of it I have not tried. But Ender's Game was a phenomenal book for me.
Yeah, I know the movie was drastically different from the book.
I haven't even watched the movie yet.
My son just turned 11, so he's at that step where he can now watch slightly more violent movies. And so I'm using, he saw a clip of Ender's Game, the movie, and asked what it was. And I'm going to trick him into reading the book by having him watch the movie and say, well, now you should read the book because there's so much more in the book. So this is my devious plan of getting my son further into science fiction novels.
I like it.
You need to also get him into Xenocide and Speaker of the Dead.
Okay.
Speaker, I think, is probably the best one of the three, in my opinion.
Yeah, I've not read all the Ender books, despite you know, how much I love the first few. But those first two are phenomenal books.
Yeah. That is true. I mean, that's cool.
Well, speaking of sci-fi stuff.
Speaking of sci-fi, when you were writing Escape Scope in 83, your main character, Mike, can see into the future. And, of course, the whole thing is sort of set in the future, too. And I was noticing the technology, you know, it was interesting and fascinating at the time, but it was the 80s, so all of this was still, you know, now, of course, we're 30 years down the range, and everything has evolved. So,
right.
I mean, who would have thought that you would effectively be talking to us via, effectively, video phone? And so my question is, does it seem to you that reality is wilder or tamer than the fictional future that you envisioned? And are we still on track, so to speak, in your mind with the way that you saw future kind of laying out?
For our listeners, Guy just air quoted.
I just air quoted. That's me.
Well, I'm still waiting for my flying car. So.
Me too. So I've been waiting for my flying car.
In some ways, the future has not kept up with my hopes. But in many other ways, it's surpassed my expectations. The fact that the computer revolution went so fast and so far surprised me. The fact that we've now got car manufacturers talking about making nothing but autonomous vehicles by 2020, that surprised me. But we don't have a cure for cancer.
Right.
You know, we don't. There's a lot of things we don't understand about the human brain. I think the obvious trend is acceleration. They talk about the ragged edge of the future. You know, if you set a novel 20 years from now, it's not like all the cars you see on the roads are going to be built that year. You're going to see some junkers built in the 80s still. And so, you know, some aspects of this wave of change are going to reach out in front of others, and some are going to be stubbornly slow.
Well, leading into that question then, where do you see us being in 30 years?
I have a lot of trust in some of the predictions that Robert Kurzweil has made. He's got a pretty good track record.
He does. He has an impressive track record.
Yeah.
And he even puts up with Neil deGrasse Tyson messing with him. As I heard him recently on Star Talk, and I thought, wow, he puts up really well with Dr. Tyson just kind of messing with him.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, if you go 30 years into his future, he's got us essentially immortal, being able to back our brains up on computers.
He was talking about nanobots and our frontal lobes.
Yeah, move into new bodies. Mm-hmm. It's he's already... I mean, he's taking a regimen of life extension drugs, some of which I'm taking, and some of them are fairly cheap, you know, lecithin and common resveratrol. I think lifetimes are still extending, and my goal is that hockey stick, you know, where I feel great until the very end. I've seen gradual declines, and I don't want that.
Yeah. We both have gone through that too.
One question we ask all of our guests, because we are a show about being a geek, and it doesn't have to be related to the obvious answer. So this is what we use the term geeking for is something that you become passionate about that you just really enjoy doing.
For example, my mom was a Bronco maniac.
Your mom.
And we definitely consider that geeky because she could list Elway's stats all the way back to wherever. I don't even know where she got this information
right.
from.
And we have some friends who are huge into the card game Magic, and so they can recite encyclopedias of the cards that exist in the game. So they clearly have a passion for that. So for you, what do you geek out about?
What's your passion?
Besides books and movies, I really enjoy photography, music, computer games. Those are probably the biggest ones.
We're going to find you on World of Warcraft now.
You might find me on Terra or Riders of Icarus or Lord of the Rings.
Nice.
There you go. So you could game with John Stith.
John Stith.
I threw an extra T in for free. I apologize for that.
He has already two T's in his name. Right. We don't need to add anymore.
I'm from the South. I like tea.
Oh, yeah, that's true. So. Okay. Well, last question is, where can we find you?
Well, my website is neverend.com. I'm on Facebook with two accounts, or two pages, basically, kind of a standard writer's page, and then my own personal page, which, you know, pretty much anyone's welcome to friend. On my personal page, besides some occasional writing news, I post backyard photography and various comments about what other things are going on in the world. I do try to stay away from politics. It's just so divisive lately that we need to get back to a point where we can talk to each other about significant issues.
We're not polarized like we are now. Yeah. Hey, we absolutely agree. Okay, well, you can talk to us on Twitter at RMGeekTank, and also Facebook at Rocky Mountain Geek Tank, or email us at questions@RockyMountainGeekTank.com.
You can also find us on iTunes, Google Play, and YouTube. Just search for Rocky Mountain Geek Tank. Be sure to give us stars and likes. More stars gives more stars in the galaxies and makes the galaxies even bigger.
It's true. Special thanks today to our guest, John Stith, and thank you very much for joining us.
And we'll sure if you missed it, you can always go to our website and we'll have, or actually go to Facebook and we'll have a post on there with the links to where you can find our guest today.
Yep. Okay.
That's great.
Well, that's all we have.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
It was awesome having you on board. Thank you very much. And thank you for experimenting with us. Yes. We're still not 100% sure this worked. We'll find out whether this plays back.
We'll find out.
Okay. Well, that's all we have for today. I've been Guy.
I've been Troy.
And this is Geek Tank.
Geek Tank is a production of Fox Play Media and is protected under the Creative Commons 3.0 license. Your hosts today were Guy S. Davis and C. Troy Floor. Kevin Weibler is our engineer. And our music was composed by David Coyle. If you like what you are hearing, consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/Fox Play. I'm Mike Davis, reminding you that fear is the mind killer. Good night.